Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian Tobias. As we approach the weekend, it's time to examine what's happening on our cinema screens. And so we've invited Little White Lies editor David Jenkins to give us his expert opinion on this week's releases. Welcome to the studio, David. Now, we're going to kick off the show with the much talked about Swiss Army Man. The film opens as Hank, a desperate castaway on a deserted island, is about to take his own life. He notices a washed up body, that of Daniel Radcliffe, who he names Manny after discovering that the corpse can speak and hold supernatural powers that might be able to get him home. Let's hear a clip first.
I needed you to help me get home. Okay, buddy?
Okay, buddy.
You're a miracle. Or I'm just hallucinating from starvation.
You're special.
I'm special.
And that was a sound up from the film Swiss Army Man. Now, David, a bizarre concept. What is this film really about?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say, really, beyond what you've already said. What you've said is exactly right. I mean, and the title is very literal, I guess. It's essentially the Daniel Radcliffe's corpse becomes the kind of the sort of all-purpose tool.
The Swiss Army knife.
The Swiss Army knife that helps Hank get back off the island and back to his life. And I guess, you know, without giving too much away, it's one of these films that this concept is revealed quite early on, but then it develops on and it becomes something quite different, I think. And I would say probably something less interesting.
Oh, dear.
But, I mean, in fact, one thing to say is that on my way here, I noticed an advertisement for the film on the tube. And it's one of these, what they've gone with is they have like a 5-star review on there with some, you know, hyperbole above it, but they've also got a 1-star review on it on the poster saying I absolutely hated this film. And so they're playing the kind of
love hate
thing with it, and I definitely think it's one of those films that if you go in and you go with it and you're kind of you want to go with it, you might like it. And then it can be and could be tremendously annoying, I think.
Why would Daniel Radcliffe of Harry Potter fame take on this role?
Well, I think it's, you know, I think he's probably doing anything he can to sort of cast off the shackles of that image. And, you know, fair play to him, to be honest. I mean, I think it's really interesting that he's just
to play a dead, flagellant corpse.
Exactly. I mean, I guess that's part of the sell, really, is like, I think the film does get a measure of cachet in that it's kind of Harry Potter it's Harry Potter as a flatulent corpse as well as Daniel Radcliffe's. I mean, and I know that's a kind of sad thing to have to say, but like, you know, he will forever be kind of associated with that role. But I mean, I think one of the things that this film does show is that he's great at playing a flatulent corpse. And I mean, he does
the
that
Oscar
really well.
For.
Yeah, indeed. I think that, you know, if there is a metric for playing flatulent corpses, he's kind of hit the high bar, I think.
The directors, tell us a little bit about their background and they have some interesting techniques. I gather the use of music is quite effective.
Yeah, I mean, as you heard in the clip, they have much of the film, they hit lots of euphoric peaks. And I think actually one of the sort of issues I had with the film is that the music really, it sort of grabs you by the lapels a bit too much. It kind of shakes you. And maybe that the euphoria of the music doesn't quite connect with what's actually happening.
But
the drama
the characters
of the film.
In the middle of the film start singing the backing track?
There is elements of that. I mean, everything is, you know, fantasy reality interplaying in a quite haphazard way. I think it kind of becomes this anything goes film. You know, just you kind of stop really caring in, you know, whether it's reality or whether it's fiction or whether they survive or whether they don't survive. It just becomes a sort of slightly random parade of quite eccentric things by the end.
Well, the Swiss Army Man premiered at the Sundance Film Festival at the beginning of the year and subsequently rolled out in North America and Australia. And the film arrives in the UK today. Let's move offshore now to an oil rig in the Gulf of Mexico, the setting of our next film, Deepwater Horizon. This drama, which stars Mark Wahlberg, John Malkovich and Kate Hudson, is based on the true story of the explosion of a drilling rig in 2010 that created the worst oil spill in American history. David, this story made headlines all over the world with a lot of complex issues that reverberated long after the explosion. What's the focus of the film?
Well, I mean, it's interesting you say that because the focus is absolutely not the oil spill. Mm-hmm. There's no real interest in the kind of vast ecological damage caused by this tragedy. The focus is, it's more of a kind of Poseidon adventure, towering inferno disaster movie. It's people trapped in a building and they need to get out before it blows up movie. So, yeah, the focus is very much on, you know, the working class heroes, the survival, the sort of battle between the kind of corporate stooges, and you know, it plays it. I thought, as entertaining though it was on that level, it plays it quite straight. You know, it's a genre film, you know, before it's a political film or a film with a social conscience.
Let's hear a clip from the movie.
We a big company, millions of moving parts.
Hey, how you doing, man?
We all work very hard to ensure those moving parts are functioning as a means to a very profitable end for all of us.
Are you seeing this?
Get everybody off this!
Mike, what is that? Is everything okay?
We gotta go right now!
That was a clip from Deepwater Horizon, which premiered at the Toronto Film Festival, which got a standing ovation. What do you think the ovation was for?
Well, it is quite a kind of, I mean, director Peter Berg, his focus is on the kind of the human story. You know, he wants to, I guess he loves like the sort of, he loves like working class Americans, what they do, that how they're oppressed by, you know, corporate people or the army or this kind of higher power. I think you'd say he was sort of like a little right wing in his kind of, you know, his values, I guess. But yeah, the film is a sort of, you know, the focus is very much taken away from the tragedy and more on the survivors. You know, I mean, obviously that it's terrible that people died, but I think his focus is on we made it through this, you know.
And of course, the hero being Mark Wahlberg, who from everything I've seen, you know, plays a hero very well.
You know, he is actually definitely the sort of top trump of the film. I mean, he's definitely, you feel that he's almost playing himself in this film. He's very kind of personable. And one of the things that him and the director are great at doing together is creating this sort of wise guy patter between him and the other workers on the rig. So they've each got this kind of, there's a sequence at the beginning where he's walking around the rig and he's sort of saying hi to all his mates. And they've got a little kind of to and fro. And you instantly get that kind of feeling that, you know, these guys know each other, they've got a relationship, they've worked for each other for a long time, and Wahlberg's able to do that, capture that in an instant, which is really great. And I mean, it does in the end make you want him to survive and get back to his family. So, you know, he builds up the stakes purely through his kind of performance, I think.
I was reading a review in Variety, and it said that the language is so technical and so fast that you miss 75% of what's happening. But then the review went on to say it almost doesn't matter because the special effects and the drama of it kind of carry the viewer along.
Well, I guess, I mean, they're sort of trying to get some sense of realism and what it was actually like and what people actually talk about on an oil rig. I mean, in fact, in the clip there, you get a little taster of John Malkovich, who is the kind of BP
bad
stooge.
Boy.
And I mean, he's got this kind of almost comic New Orleans kind of drawl. And, you know, he's the way he's presented, he may as well have a pitchfork and horns. I mean, he's the devil incarnate. He's pure evil. Whether the film depicts what happened in a, you know, militantly truthful way, we'll never really know. But, you know,
he's not scared of pointing the finger.
No, this film's version of events is very much that BP essentially executed a lot of people and, you know, wantonly caused this oil spill because of their avaricious ways. That's what the film is saying here.
Well, Deepwater Horizon is rolling out in cinemas around the world now. Our final film today takes us to Tehran in 1988, where, if rages of war weren't enough to contend with, one mother and daughter find themselves haunted by a mysterious evil. The film is called Under the Shadow and is directed by British-Iranian director Babak Anvare. David, tell us about this film.
Well, this is really interesting. I guess it's sort of an I've never really encountered anything quite like it. On one side, it's a hard horror genre film, and on the other, it's a kind of Iranian social realist film with a kind of seam of feminism in it, and somehow it works really well. It's these two kind of opposing sides play off each other really well and enhance one another really well. So you actually end up getting a really scary film that has actually some meat to it and some interesting thoughts and ideas and politics. So.
It was unveiled at the Sundance Film Festival, which has a great reputation for discovering horror films, right? Way back, Blair Witch Project. Where is the sort of fear and tension in this film? What is the sort of plot that starts up that fear?
Well, I mean, you have this kind of dual thing where the story is a mother and her daughter are in this apartment. Her husband's had to leave because he's an army medic. And Tehran is being bombed by Iraq. And people are being advised to leave Tehran. But there are these things which, to be honest, I can't really talk about without spoiling the film.
Okay, no spoilers.
That sort of impel her to stay. She can't get away, even though the her building is being bombed and she's having to run down with her daughter to the air raid shelter. There are these mysterious forces keeping her there. And on one side, it is very much a kind of ghost story, and there is a sort of supernatural element to the film. But on the other, there is this kind of feminist, metaphorical side.
So why the feminist? Because it seems that that's something completely, almost at odds with the fantasy of a horror film. Where does the feminism come in, or women's issues?
Well, I guess what it's trying to do is it uses the setup of a woman in a flat and being haunted by these things, and it sort of says, well, you know, why would a woman be trapped in an apartment? And, you know, it looks at how women were and are oppressed in Tehran. And, you know, the opening scene of the film, in fact, is her trying to get a place in medical school. And she's told, because of previous political activity, she's not allowed to be enrolled in the university and thus will never be able to become a medic. So the film opens on her basically being told that she's going to have to be a housewife for the rest of her life, you know. So the film, I think, is, as much as it is this kind of ghost story that has all these other mechanics to it, the fact that it opens on this note of her basically discovering that her dreams are over, she's going to have to be, you know, a housewife, that feeds into the idea that she is trapped in this apartment with her to bring up her daughter. So
a low budget film, what does it look like on screen?
Props to the director. He's really done, I mean, you know, it's a single setting, essentially, but it's really effective. He uses space really well. He uses props really well, and sound and camera movement and things like that. It feels like a really well thought through film. It's got lots of effective scares, and I think it works really well. And at the same time, I think maybe a good sign of a low budget film is you absolutely don't watch it and think, oh, that was a low budget film. You know, it hides its kind of modest roots, modest financial roots very well, actually, I thought.
Well, Under the Shadow is out today in the UK and will hit American screens next Friday, October 7th. Well, that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks to my guest, David Jenkins. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian DeBias. My producer was Holly Fisher, and the show was researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time next Monday, when we'll be kicking off the week with a look at the art exhibitions in New York. But for now, thanks for listening. Goodbye.